the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, coming to you live from the kitchen tonight. My name is Joey. Here's always my co-host, Len. Len, great to see you. So sad we couldn't do this in person after finally getting to see each other in person for the first time in a while on the weekend. How's things over there?
Yeah, it's very good. It's almost like going back in time. If I only was in that same room with you, it'd be like just like where we first started. I think it was the first two or three episodes were done at that very same table, unless you change that table. I'm not sure.
This table is new, but the vibe is the very same table. This is hilarious. I was hoping that most of this stuff wouldn't like be visible, but you can clearly see that I've hooked my mic onto an old wooden chair.
It's blurred. It's hard to tell. If you didn't even mention it, Joey, it would have been, it looked like it's anchored right to the table. So you blew your cover. That's too bad. So
my wife would have killed
me. Cut this off. Start again. We could do this right. So yeah, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, episode number 117. And we got an anchored mic to the table. It's not anchored to a chair. Don't give it that chair a kick, because that'd be fucking funny, Joey, if you did. It's good to see you're still holding up. Looks like you're drinking some coffee to get yourself a little bit of a boost. That's been a very eventful and full several days. So it's good to see you're back at it. How was your fiat mining today? Mine was brutal.
Pretty tough. I took part of the day off last minute. We'll do the sponsors and then we'll talk about the weekend. But I got to say, my wife had a lot to say about the things that were done here on the weekend for which I was not present. Getting the house ready to sell. My wife and I moving to Dundas. I was telling some of you guys on the weekend, we finally got a place in Dundas. So I'm getting ready to put my place on the market. What a pain, Len. I've never sold a house. I've only bought one. And so this is like absolutely a brutal time. I was saying to Len before we went live here that most of this stuff was like tucked away in some box. And so my wife has given me two sets of instructions. One, make sure you take some time off this week to help with stuff. So I did a little bit of that today, although I did still work half a day. And then the other one is you have a tendency to leave a path of destruction in your wake everywhere you go. And so that has to stop for 2 weeks because I won't be around to clean it up and we're not going to have time. So there we go. God bless you, Kenzie. Thank you for taking care of me. And Len, you know, I want to talk about the weekend, but first maybe we should talk about our sponsors.
Wait. The circular economy of the real estate market. I like this. You're supporting that. We have to ensure that this continues on and there's no stoppage to it, because it would be destruction to our Canadian economy. So good for you for ensuring that there is some longevity to this whole thing.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks. EasyDNS, our first sponsor. Great place for you to host your content. Uncancelable. There's no books behind me this time, but Mark wrote one called Unassailable. Recommend it. You can get it off him if you want. There's so much going on these days, Len, over at EasyDNS. I know Mark is doing some stuff with Nostr. He just announced that he did I don't want to mess this up. It's called a NIP05 something. What did he post today? I think you retweeted it, right?
Today, they made their relays private. So because I believe he's trying to end all the spam that is going on in Nostr. So he's not going to be continuing with running a public relay. And in turn, if you have a NIP05 that's registered with them, you're whitelisted, so you're okay. I think I got the gist of it. Hopefully I didn't miss anything. If so, Mark, just fill in the blanks and give me a kick in the butt for missing the main points. I'm sorry if that's the case, but yeah. Continue on with the joy.
It's sick. So he's got obviously tons of stuff going on, domain hosting, email hosting, all of which he will help you with. If you have a domain already, you want to move it over there, Mark and team will make sure that you get it done quickly, easily, and without too much hassle. I mean, those things are always probably a little difficult, but Mark and his guys and girls make it easy for you. PGP email, I should say GPG email as well. If you want to host a BTC Pay server or a Nostr relay, they have VPS options for you as well. Use the code CBP Media when you go there. Or tell Mark we sent you. We heard from a lot of you guys on the weekend that you're using EasyDNS, and I see Mike in the chat. The number of people who told us they're using EasyDNS on the weekend because of our show, I fucking love it. And, you know, Mark, obviously, Mark is a guy, having spent some time with him on the weekend, Len, he hung out with Brandon and I both in the room Friday and Saturday. Obviously, we did a live show. And Saturday night, you know, before we went out to Plate Liquor's after party. And I got to say, Mark, you plot Mark down anywhere and he'll find someone to talk to. He's got something in common with somebody. True Renaissance man, knows what he's doing out there. Great Bitcoiner. And so we're happy to be sponsored by him. Also, I'll just mention that Greg Foss, during his talk on the weekend, did you see the shirt he was wearing?
Easy DNS. And EDM. I was wearing that shirt on Sunday and I got stopped several times. People were asking me, do I work for them or do what do they do? So there was a lot of questions to do with Easy DNS. And because there's a lightning bolt running through it, Mark was saying people might have even been thinking that it has something to do with lightning. So, I could see that. I could see if there may be somebody drawing a connection between the two, but
I love it.
There's no direct connection.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a great sponsor all the same. And we also met with our other sponsor for the first time. Who are they?
Yeah, it's Bull Bitcoin. Met Francis in person, and that was great. Not just he, but a large number of the Bull Bitcoin team. And they also unveiled some really big news, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. But if you're looking to get on a Bitcoin standard, it's a good place to do so. You could buy Bitcoin with your dirty fiat. You could sell your Bitcoin and get some dirty fiat as well. You could pay your bills, buy gift cards, KYC-free Bitcoin. I can't stress that enough. Check the video that I put on that not too long ago. But then there's the news that came out just this past weekend at the conference, and that there's going to be a killer app that's going to be revealed. Well, that has been revealed. In fact, I have it on my phone. It's available right now only in APK form. So if you have an Android phone and you want to sideload something, like here's a snippet of it.
Not to cut you off, I tweeted a video I took of one of the guys at the bar. Actually, you had the wallet fully set up and being used. So he was flipping through his stuff. You can also look at that video if you're interested in that.
Yeah. And so it's going to be available on Android, like the Play Store. Is it the Play Store? Whatever, the App Store, whatever. It's going to be available in the next week or two, and on the iOS App Store within the next 3 weeks. That's what I understand. I don't know if that's true, but who knows? They could they could say no to everything that's Bitcoin related on any of those two. We'll be talking about that later on. But yeah, use our promo code below if you sign up, and you're going to get $20 added to your account. So it's a good, you know, good deal. Why not? $20.
Killer deal.
Yeah, Bitcoin KYC free. How could you go wrong?
I want to say that I was talking to the Bull Bitcoin guys on Saturday night after, you know, several beers. And I said to them that, you know, we've had an unbelievable amount of signups and volume since we started our missionary program with them, the partnership with them. It's amazing, man. Like, and maybe I'll just, you know, transition here right to the weekend and the thank yous before we talk about the conference. Just a huge thank you to all you guys and girls who are supporting the show, supporting Bitcoin, supporting Len and I. It was amazing to see, you know, halfway through day one, in the lobby, in the bar, downstairs in the restaurant, eating lunch at the Osmos that was like in the court, since there was no tahini. Sorry, Ali. People like wearing the shirts we just released. People rocking those shirts all around the conference. And like, I honest to God, man, like, I'm not an emotional guy, but I was just like so taken aback and so humbled by all the amazing kind words. And I want to give a special shout out to a family I took a picture with on the weekend. Let me just get the names right here, because it was interesting, right? Taras, Karen, and Zoe. So Len, like, to give you an idea of the diversity of the people that listen to the program, watch the program, and are into Bitcoin, this family approached me yesterday, maybe midday or just before the second break or before the second break ended, and was saying that they've been listening to us for a long time. And their daughter, who's 16, was also there saying, you know, it's kind of like through osmosis. She's been listening to it too and talking about it. And obviously you and I posed for a picture with them. And you know, there's a number of people who I think saw us for the first time after listening to us for a while and wanted pictures and wanted to talk and just wanted to thank us. And it's us that should be thanking you, not the other way around. You know, we started this as a passion project. It's still a passion project. But the amount of incredible opportunities, incredible people we've met over the last little while, it's truly been sensational. It's been fantastic. It's been a blessing. Like, you could pick your descriptor. As far as like other thanks, the Bull Bitcoin team, incredible, incredible guys, man. I totally dropped the ball on all the Bull Bitcoin merch on Saturday morning. I don't know if you know this, Len. I don't know if you know what happened, but obviously Madex sent all the Bull Bitcoin merch and all of his stuff to my house in the week leading up to the conference. And I told Guillaume from Bull Bitcoin, who's a great, great young Bitcoiner. I think he's like 25 years old. Awesome, awesome guy. I told Guillaume, come meet me or go to my, I'll give you my hotel room key, go to my hotel room and grab my car keys and go to my car. Here's how you get there. So I sent him walking from the conference to the condo I was staying at. My car keys were still in my pants pocket. I brought them with me to the conference. So he had to come back and then go back a second time to get all the stuff, then come back to the conference. Didn't put up a fuss about it. And in fact, even got me some Tylenol when he got back because I had a real stinger from Friday night's activities.
What caused that?
I know, who knows, right? We were cutting the rug till pretty late on Friday night. So Guillaume, Francis, Matt from Bull Bitcoin talked to those guys a lot. They even entertained my, you know, broken French as much as they could, which was great. I really appreciate that. I liked the opportunity to practice. You know, all the amazing speakers that I was able to meet, you know, I won't name all of you, just incredible. Madex, for your kindness, man. Like, you know, incredible. You hear so much about a guy, you meet him and he's just nothing but humble. The guy makes the best stuff in the space as far as artwork and you know, proof of work instead of these fucking NFTs. Incredibly humble guy. All the conference organizers, Dan, Manuela, Mike, you know, and all their friends and family who are helping them. I just want to say one thing before maybe we start talking about the conference recap more broadly, Leonard, if you have some thank yous. There's a group chat floating around out there from a guy whose name I won't mention because I don't want to give him the press, claiming that the event organizers for the weekend are lining their pockets somehow. That's ridiculous. Plate Liquor knows this. Dan and Manuela, who organized most of the event, they're working around the clock, man. These guys are overseas, I think, visiting family over the summer, as they are, of course, you know, as is their right to do. And Dan especially, you know, would call me or text me in the middle of the night sometimes, their time, or near the middle of the night sometimes, their time, just so he could get a quick conversation with me, quick comment, quick chat, whatever. And, you know, whether or not they made $0 or $5,000 or whatever, it simply is not enough for the work they put in. You see those guys flying around during the conference. The number of times you could see in the WhatsApp chat that we had, and Plate was in that too, we're always doing stuff, trying to make sure that the guests and attendees and speakers are having the best, most seamless, most enjoyable experience possible. The giveaways they sought out, the opportunities that they gave attendees to talk to some of their favorite Bitcoiners. I mean, how many times do you get a chance to talk to Larry and Greg, who, by the way, like both wearing like boat shoes and sandals during their speech? Unbelievable boomer content there. You know, this idea that they're lining their pockets is bullshit. That guy, you know, if you're in that chat, you know what chat I'm talking about. And I would just recommend that you maybe put in a good word for that conference and those organizers too, because I don't think there's going to be enough support for them after the conference. Because people forget. They forget about the good time they had, right? They just think about what's being said now. And I just want to give my support and full endorsement, full, you know, thanks and gratitude to Dan and Manuela, Mike, and all the rest of the team. You two play because you were instrumental as well. And just an amazing, amazing first conference, a great inaugural get-together of great people, I think, after all the right things. So, again, thank you so much for everyone who came. Thanks so much for all the great comments and you know, support you've given us in the conference, and I can't wait to do it again next year.
Yeah, let's hope that it's local. We'll see where it goes next. It could be Montreal, it could be BC, who the heck knows? But there's a lot of people. I'm not going to thank everybody because it's just we've gone through already quite a bit of time here. Just one guy in particular, Fernando, thank you so much for buying the shirt. Now, we do have the shirts available for sale. Still, we got a bunch left. So if you want to get one, I know some people were asking if they could get their hands on them. Yeah, we have medium, large, and extra large, I think.
I gotta check the box. Maybe I'll post what we have left. But the only thing is, it's, what is it, 25 with Bitcoin, 30 CAD.
Online only Bitcoin. We're not touching.
And you got to pay the shipping. Shipping ain't cheap, and we're not making a lot of money on the shirts. So I can't get rid of them at a loss. But we're happy to sell them and ship them if you guys want. Canada, U.S. doesn't matter. I know there's been a bunch of U.S. listeners, so. Yeah, man. I'm good to start, Len. If you're good to start, maybe we start.
No, with we still have more.
What do you think? More? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, we have all the boosts, Joey, because remember, we are donating all these boosts to the Bitcoin Defense Fund. So thank you to everybody who has donated some sats to us, and we're going to be redirecting them over to that fund over there to help ensure that Bitcoin developers have the means necessary to fight off any legal challenges out there. Owen boosted us. He was saying, looking forward to the conference. And yeah, that was great. That was before the conference took place, and I met him. Just fantastic guy. I also have another one from my boost, my first boost test. And this is what's up from YEG. I have no idea who this is, but tested it. Sent us 500 sats. Thank you very much. Mo BTC Dick. Canadians are definitely proud to be Canadian, but I think 90% of us recognize how shit it has been to live here for the past while. Well, well over half our wealth is taken by the government, and it feels like we get less and less for it, and they take more and more. Most people my age, mid to late 20s, heavily consider moving, but really don't want to leave their beloved countries. Also, thanks, Mark, for the Twitter follow. I think that's Mark Jeftovic, but could be wrong. Risa is actually the name. She says, thanks for meeting me. She met me at the Bitcoin conference. Pleasure meeting her and her son over there. And she also mentions, Joey, you did an amazing job emceeing and keeping everybody engaged. Absolutely, that is true. Rander, speaking on alcohol and sales tax, alcohol stores in Alberta are all over the place and open late, way different than Ontario. Also, Alberta has no PST, provincial sales tax. We only pay the standard 5% GST. Way different than Ontario, 100%. And he's also asking, I can't wait to buy the merch, fellas. Well, reach out to us. We'll be happy to get it in your hands.
For sure.
MCOT writes in, thanks for the mining industry update. Keep up the great work, Blockware. That's my interview with the Blockware team. And MoBTC Dick writes in, Len, did you watch the Stanley Cup Finals? No, I did not. Shay Theodore is from BC. Stoked to have a BC boy as a Stanley Cup winner this year. I'm sure there's a BC boy every year on the Stanley Cup winning team, but what the heck do I know? And some guy writes in, his name is Sir Snakes a Lot. Take this boost because Len doesn't watch that trash, but I'm glad Joey watches it so I don't have to. I don't know what he's referring to, but
It's probably Bankless, right? Gotta be Bankless.
I don't watch that fucking trash. Yeah, thank you for watching it, Joey, so we don't have to. Norman Remnant tears to making it the pod making it. And Teets writes in, I love CBC, that's the Canadian Bitcoin Conference. And yeah, that's it for the boost. Thank you. So we'll just send this off to the Bitcoin Defense Fund and let them do what they may with it. So
absolutely.
Price of Bitcoin, Joey.
No idea. Don't have my block clock. What is it?
35,349 in Canadian dollars.
And I'll tell you what it is. It's 26,735. So we're a little up today, right? ETF news got to be pushing that a little bit, I think.
I think so, but whatever. Let's talk about that right off the bat. We have
sure.
The BlackRock / Fidelity ETF news. Well, first a BlackRock thing. BlackRock is no small company. They have about $10 trillion of assets under management, $10 trillion. It's larger than almost every country out there. And if you do the math, I took a peek at this. The New York Stock Exchange, the market cap for that is around $25 trillion. And the NASDAQ itself is another $25 trillion. So this is, if all the assets under management was from the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ, that's one-fifth. Sorry, it's 20%. That's a lot. One-fifth, yeah. That's under BlackRock's management. That's nuts. And there was a scoop that was done from CoinDesk, and they were saying that BlackRock was going to go through the process to file the paperwork to have a spot Bitcoin ETF. It is a spot Bitcoin ETF. I'm not 100% sure. Is this going to be a GBTC style?
It's or both. They filed for a trust, but they also filed for an ETF, I believe. Let's finish the summary, and then we can talk about what all this means. I think this is a lot of stuff floating around out there right now.
Well, so let's just assume it's a proper spot Bitcoin ETF, not a GPT style. So I'm going to go ahead with that thinking. Number one, I just want to say that it's reported that BlackRock has a nearly perfect record of 575-1 for getting ETFs approved. I'm not sure if this is true, and I'm not sure which ETF was not approved. I tried taking a look at it. If anybody knows, I'd love to know which one and why that was not approved, because that's a heck of a record. So if that's true and they continue with this, it's quite likely this is going to get approved, but the question is when.
Yeah.
And someone went through all the documents for this ETF filing and figured out that there is wording in there. There's some jargon about what happens if there's a hard fork. And BlackRock will determine which network is going to be the one that they follow. It may not necessarily be the most valuable chain. They're going to follow the one that they think is best for their clients. Of note, when you do a fork, you still keep the amount of coins from the original when the fork is done. For example, yes. When Bitcoin Cash forked away from Bitcoin, if you had some Bitcoin, well, you got kept your Bitcoin, but also kept it with the same amount in Bitcoin Cash. They don't mention anything like that. So if there's a fork, it looks like they're going to keep some of the yeah. coins from the fork. I mean, there was no mention of this. So anyways, all this leads me to believe, and my thinking continually evolves. They say, if you asked me 2 years ago, I would have been jumping for joy. But 2 years later, and given what's transpired in everybody's life, and I'm reading the tea leaves here. This is going to be a lot more paper Bitcoin and IOUs out there. We already have a lot of this. Canada has a number of Bitcoin ETFs. And do we need some more paper Bitcoin? Do we need more of these IOUs out there? We have enough already with existing dollar system we operate in. Is this all to say that it's potential to get rugged? Probably not. I mean, if you're dealing with BlackRock, I don't think you're going to get rugged in the process, but there's always a small percentage of chance you potentially will, although it's close enough to zero, but it's still a chance. But if you look at it, this is going to appeal for people trying to get fiat gains. Really, it's not going to be targeting hardcore Bitcoiners, although some will probably use it for their 401ks and try to use that in that particular tax-efficient account. But for the majority, I think it's not for hardcore Bitcoiners, nor is it going to be for people that are going to transition into hardcore Bitcoiners. The majority of people that are going to use this, I'm assuming, is going to just be people that don't care really about Bitcoin. It's just number go up. That's what they're chasing. So there is some good to this. And you're going to have some companies. I mean, the approval of this type of ETF will give the opportunity for companies to buy some Bitcoin, at least indirectly, and add it to their balance sheet. But I'll argue you kind of have that already with MSTR. MicroStrategy is a pseudo ETF and a Bitcoin ETF because of how much Bitcoin they have on their balance sheet. So there's nothing precluding anybody, any company out there to purchase MicroStrategy shares. So that's just another thing. But is this going to introduce anybody or help introduce anybody into Bitcoin? Maybe a very small percentage. They're going to follow the price, but they're not looking at the good things that make Bitcoin unique, all the properties that surrounding that make it something we want to replace the existing system. So all that being said is this is good, but with a grain of salt, I'm really not all that happy about this. I'm not sad about this. It's not going to make Bitcoin. It's not going to break Bitcoin. Bitcoin's going to chug along regardless if this application gets approved or denied or whatever. It's just going to create potentially more volatility with the price. Then if volatility increases, the number goes up, people may jump in again and may get wrecked in the process as things go down and they decide to sell because they have to, given the environment of the economy. People need money. And it just is interesting that they filed this application for the ETF. Think of all the times Larry Fink has said shit about Bitcoin, and he's turned on a dime. But he's also saying recently that the U.S. is jeopardizing the dollar reserve currency status. This happened just a few days ago. He said this, or maybe a week or two ago. So it's interesting that all this is coming out at the same time. And on top of that, we have Fidelity, which this is claims. I don't know if this is true or not. They're preparing to file their own application for a Bitcoin ETF, similar to what BlackRock did. There's also rumors that they're going to be acquiring Grayscale.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe buy it and convert it. I don't know. There's so much going on here. It's a lot of speculation, but is it really a lot of good news? I don't know. It's news. Good. I don't think so.
I'm exhausted. So I was hoping that we would have the same take and I could just nod along, but instead I have to fucking disagree with everything you said. So buckle up.
This I like.
So, okay. You say that this is not going to be, it's not like a bona fide positive for Bitcoin. I disagree. I think this is a big positive, and I'll tell you why. One of the things that we're tackling here is this idea of exposing the trillions of dollars in baby boomer portfolios to Bitcoin. They don't want to do it. They're not going to self-custody. No one over 50, I shouldn't say no one, because there's a lot of quality over 50 Bitcoiners at the conference, but very few people over 50 are going to NVK, going to Bull Bitcoin and saying, I want to buy and self-custody my stuff. And a bunch of people talk about this on the weekend, like Stefan Levera and others, this idea of like baby steps, right? Oftentimes when we say baby steps, we're still missing the point. We're still missing where we started. And all of us started at the same place, wanting to buy Bitcoin in the most tax efficient way. This gives them an opportunity. Now, you mentioned MSTR. MicroStrategy is its own sort of animal. I would say that most people who want exposure to Bitcoin and look at MSTR as something that's too risky, and in my opinion, are probably turned off by Mike Saylor too, because he comes off as a little much sometimes for people who are, you know, on zero, let's say. So you got those two things to consider. As far as the, you know, will this give people exposure to the mission, the ethos, and not just to the price? This is where I think it's our responsibility to welcome these people with open arms, not call them fiat maxis, not call them status, not say that they need daddy at the bank to protect them or whatever. I think instead what we should be saying is, look, if you just bought this ETF, let's talk about what's in it. There's oftentimes, especially with ETF investing, it's sort of set and forget. I would guess that like 80% of ETF purchases are done automatically by people who are just doing auto investing through their job or through Wealthsimple or whatever. But we can talk about what's in this ETF. It's Bitcoin. Here's what Bitcoin is. Here's what Bitcoin does. Here's how Fidelity, BlackRock, whoever are storing it. And here's what you can do if you want to do the same thing. And so I think that when you look at the exposure that these people are getting, we have to find a way to bring them in. Now, in my view, the tools we've been using in the past to do this have been what? Twitter, podcasts, YouTube videos. Unfortunately for us, a lot of that $1 trillion, you know, multi-trillion dollar crowd isn't coming to the CBP on a Monday night to watch me and you shoot the shit. They just ain't going to do it. And they're not going to go to YouTube. They're not going to go to Twitter. So how do we get them in? My suggestion is that we need to start talking to portfolio managers, retail portfolio managers, people at banks, people who do private wealth management, people who do estate planning, whatever. And maybe most importantly, we need to start making comparisons to things that are in the boomer portfolio that may not be successful long-term, like bonds. Okay. So Foss obviously talks a lot about this. There's ways that we can engage with this crowd that we're not doing right now. And I think maybe most importantly and most disconcertingly, we're not competent at it yet as a group. I don't know what the fix is for that, Len. I would like to say that most of the stuff, like just speaking about our content, most of the stuff we put out is approachable because we try and talk about what it means for the average person, what it means if you're Canadian. But even still, we're on a platform that's not really accessible to that crowd. There's not going to be a lot of people who are coming close to retirement looking at this platform and saying, yeah, I like what these guys are saying. Let's do what they do, or let's think about what they're thinking about. So I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. How do we make this a top of the funnel opportunity? Francis talks a lot about funnels. A lot of people in the space talk about funnels and where people are in the funnel. How do we make this a top of funnel opportunity for Bitcoin? Because this is really an unprecedented chance we're getting here. These people are going to be looking at this for the first time with an opportunity to buy in a tax efficient vehicle, a retirement savings plan, whatever. And we have to find a way to convert them into hodlers. How do we do it? I don't know.
They have two different ways of doing it. They could either learn from other people's experience, or they could learn through their own experience. And if you learn from other people's experience, and there has been a number of different episodes that people could point to and see as to why it is advantageous to hold on to your Bitcoin and don't rely on anybody, to don't trust but verify type mentality. Those are the people that are going to be the easiest ones to attract and bring along in the top of the funnel and bring them down to the very bottom to where hardcore Bitcoiners are. But the ones that have to learn through their own pain, those are the ones, unfortunately, I think they're going to stay in those ETFs for the longest time possible because they're chasing those fiat gains. And they're going to be very, very difficult to convert over, if at all. They're going to have to get wrecked themselves. And they're going to have to find out that one day they don't have access to the funds, same way people do in Venezuela, Lebanon, Turkey, you name it. They go to the bank and, oh, sorry, your money, I know you put it in there. We operate on a fractional reserve system and we loaned it out. We made some bad loans and it's gone. I'm sorry. So fend for yourself. Those are the ones that at that point, they're going to have to convert, but then it's too late. All the wealth that they have accumulated and put into whatever vehicle that they think it's they had some access to it later on, be it the bank or an ETF, they're gonna have to start from scratch. And that's too bad, because I think those are the people, the majority of people that are gonna fit into that category. And those they'll have to learn from their own mistakes There's, and that's too bad because there's so many opportunities, so many stories out there, recent, and even in our own nation. It's not, you don't have to look that far. And I'll give you a side, story on the side here. Not too long ago, you came out and mentioned that, and I want to give you kudos for that, that you lost some Bitcoin through your cold card.
Yeah.
And it was I guess you're still unaware as to how that was happened.
I know exactly how it happened.
And I don't want to talk about it because in case it's going to make anything. Sure. Just in case, I don't know, because I don't want to make it uncomfortable.
Well, I'll tell you, no, it's not a security hole with the cold card. It was a problem with my entropy. There's constantly scripts running that basically just use the dice roll entropy. And that's exactly what I did. It didn't let cold card generate its own seed phrase and add my own entropy. I just used dice rolls. I didn't roll enough times. And so eventually one of these script kiddies caught the seed phrase and swept the wallet. That's exactly what happened.
So, and I want to thank you for giving that story, to telling it to me and everybody out there, because I learned from that story. From that story, I then applied that knowledge which you learned into how I deal with my cold storage with my cold card. When I set it up, I used a paranoid method, ensured that it was totally air gapped, done properly, rolled it over 100 times, in fact, the dice. And when I verified the hash, I did it on an offline computer that was running Tails Linux. So it was done properly. But I did this with the knowledge of what happened to you. So I didn't have to go through that whole process. I should give you a donation for that. But I just want to say that I think those are the people, and I like to think I'm in that category, that can learn from other people's, I don't want to say mistakes, but what happened to them. And you could go much further in life if you don't have to suffer that same type of firsthand experience where you get wrecked. And looking at ETFs, so doubling back to what you're asking, it's unfortunate it's the people that are going to get wrecked in the process. But at that point, the ETF is then worthless. I'm looking, you know, this is very, very long-term thinking, but I'm just thinking the way things are transitioning, moving forward. The ETF is not a long-term process. It's a long-term product. It's very short-term. It's for chasing fiat gains. Is it going to attract more people in Bitcoin? Maybe a small percentage. Is that what we should be doing? I don't know. Maybe. But
okay, here's the other side of that coin. Mm-hmm. As Bitcoiners, like one of the things I heard a lot on the weekend is we need to start affecting change in traditional domains, whether it's politics or finance or whatever. And there's a number of panels, number of quality Bitcoiners who have this thought. It's not like people who just showed up a year ago talking about this. It's people who've been in the space for a decade talking about this. And I heard more than once on the weekend that even though politics may not care about you, or you don't care about politics, I should say, politics will care about you. I think finance and financial vehicles, you know, are similar in nature. As Bitcoiners, isn't the answer, you know, is it at some level that we should be, you know, peppering BlackRock and other ETF providers and the people and institutions who sell them or offer them to say, look, we're not buying this unless there's a redemption option. We're not going to buy this unless it's treated the same way some of the gold ETFs are, where you can redeem whatever you own in gold in the underlying asset. We could make this a movement if we wanted to, but I just don't think we will. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I will say that there's clearly here a divide between the hardcore Bitcoiners and people who own Bitcoin, but would also like recommend a Bitcoin ETF to their parents, for example. You know, I don't do that. My parents, you know, my dad especially owns his own Bitcoin, unfortunately some Ether too, but that's a story for another day.
Chip off the old block, are you?
I know, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Wonder. Sorry about that.
My genetic memory is creeping in. So like, it's funny though. Like I personally wouldn't do that. You know, I doubt very much there's a lot of people who would do that, but we could, as a community, demand a redemption option, because that's really like, Len, if they can do it in gold, what is the excuse for not being able to do it in Bitcoin? The only excuse is that you don't have the underlying. And if you don't have the underlying anyway, then what are we talking about? That's where the opportunity for the rug is. If we don't say we need a redemption option, or if there's not proof of reserves. Now, the question also is, you know, if they're going to offer this product in Texas, will they be held to the same standard that the exchanges are held to now? If the exchanges that want to operate in Texas don't have proof of reserves, they can't operate. So is BlackRock going to have to do this? Are the other ETF providers going to have to do this? This is going to be important stuff, because I think all caps in the chat just saying that, like, hey, the first ETF rug is going to be absolutely massive, because the number of dollars in there is going to be nuts. And it seems to me like when you look at BlackRock, Fidelity, they get it. They get Bitcoin, but they also understand they don't have to provide those things. It's funny, Massa Capital, who's a guy who follows me on Twitter, was retweeted something we were talking about like 8 months ago on the show when BlackRock picked up a bunch of Marathon's debt. You remember that? And so at that time, I was calling them StackRock. And now here we are 8 months later, even though, like you said, Fink thinks it's not ESG friendly, thinks it's for con men, thinks it's garbage, thinks it's speculative. Now here he is. You know, he's come quite a ways over the last 3 years, maybe starting 8 or 10 months ago with the Marathon buy. I think it was Marathon. I don't want to fuck that up. But anyway.
I think you're right. I think it was, yeah. I think it was Marathon. But either way.
Marathon debt and mining equipment or something like that, or like a lien on the equipment. I forget what it was. But like these guys get it. And so part of getting it is making sure that they're doing as little as possible to give themselves any hurdles, hassles, et cetera. But they also know that they should be doing this. They should be doing proof of reserves. They should be doing proof that they have the coins that they say they have in the ETF, especially for a spot ETF. So let's see what happens. But I think there's jurisdictional problems here. Like I mentioned Texas there. I think that's going to be a problem. I don't know if there's other places that do this too, but as you know, as it becomes more clear that traditional investment vehicles have holes in their buckets, as someone told me on the weekend, there's going to be more and more demand for these types of ETFs and more people who want to buy them instead of holding the underlying. And so again, I just think it's our responsibility to make sure that we take advantage of this and inform people who are communicating with the investors at the bank level, at the private wealth level, whatever, to make sure that they're getting the full story.
Yeah. I just want to say this thing. For me, it's meh. Because really,
you don't care. I can't believe that. We've talked about this so many times. Like the number of stories we've had over the last 2 years about spot ETF applications, GBTC. Like this is, it seems, and there's implications here for GBTC too, even if they don't get acquired. You know, Grayscale's been trying to convert this thing to a spot ETF to cover their losses for the longest time, and they haven't been able to do it. And, you know, if this one gets approved, presumably Grayscale will get approved as well, right? So there's a lot of moving parts here that are important to the price.
And not just that. There's a flood of them. Doesn't the Kathy Woods ARK also have an application?
Fidelity too, apparently.
Yeah, I just mentioned that earlier in the show. There's a whole bunch that's going to flood into the market, similar to what happened in Canada, and you have a number of different options to buy from. And again, like I say, if you ask me, you know, even 6 months ago, my tune would have been very much different, but today it's different. And who knows, my thinking continually evolves too. In 3 months, I may be a different mentality, and I'll be jumping for joy once this is approved. But it's BlackRock is bigger than you know it will ever be, right? Like they're just a behemoth, and Bitcoin in itself is bigger than will ever be too. They're two entities that really they don't mesh. And you know, one could try to buy into it and try to sell its assets, i.e. the Bitcoin itself, but really I can't see what's the longevity here. And ultimately something like Bitcoin would replace like whatever BlackRock's trying to provide people. And BlackRock operates in a debt laden environment. And once you take away that debt, what is BlackRock? What could they do?
What if they know it's coming? Then why add it, right? Why add the vehicle? The other thing that we should talk about is like the potential for an ETF to attack price, you know, to suppress price, right? I've heard this a couple of times over the weekend, different conversations I've had. There's history here. As soon as you add a spot ETF to a commodity, it's used to, you know, suppress the price. Gold, obviously famously part of this equation, I think. So I don't know, man. I just think, a lot of people in the chat saying the same thing. This is not just me saying this, but the solution really is to hold your own coins. You know, if you have people who are interested in the ETF in your life, buy them a Sats card. CoinKite doesn't sponsor this podcast, even though they should. D, I'm talking to you. It's worth taking some time and teaching people how to do that. Francis at Bull, obviously releasing their own kind of wallet here, integration with, you can't beat this kind of stuff. And once you get people going down that path, I think it's pretty easy to keep the ball rolling. You know, you just got to start them off.
Yeah, don't get rugged yourself. Learn from other people's rugging. I think you'll be better off. But let's move on. Let's talk about a few other things that are not really Bitcoin happy or that makes up is good with Bitcoin. I'm talking about more to do with Apple. And this past week, Apple did three things. And I don't want to pick on Apple because Google's going to be doing the same thing, I'm suspecting, in the not too distant future. So this is going to be every company that is in this environment is going to do the same. So Apple, what do they do? Damas is an app for Apple. It's an iOS app, which now it's going to be opened up to different platforms. I'll explain why. It works for Nostr. Nostr is a decentralized platform where you could chat, similar to what is Twitter, but it's decentralized rather than centralized that Twitter is. So Damas, unfortunately, they wanted to do an update and they submitted their app for approval from Apple, and they got it denied. Apple denied them the opportunity to have it been updated. And in fact, it was going to get removed from the App Store altogether because of the whole zapping thing. So zapping is where you're sending somebody on Noster some Satoshis, usually small amounts of Satoshis, but it could be large amounts. But it's through Lightning. So if you like somebody's note that they put on Noster, you could send them a zap and show that your pleasure for that and say, thank you very much for doing it. So ultimately, through enough pressure, this was ultimately overturned. But the whole process was Apple was not happy that zaps were being done. I believe that they wanted to take their slice of the pie. Is anytime you use an Apple product, every time you use like the iPhone, for instance, and if you buy something on the iPhone, there's going to be a charge that is sent over to Apple themselves. So if you're buying an app for $1, I think 30% is sent over to Apple, and 70% is sent over to the developer that created the app itself. So there's the Apple tax, we'll call it. And I think this whole zapping thing gets around that. And I don't think Apple is very happy with that. So that's why they denied it altogether. But not only that, they also denied Zeus. Zeus is an open source non-custodial wallet, and I use it to connect to my Lightning node. And that too was rejected by Apple because it said it was facilitating the transmission of virtual currencies. That's just about every wallet out there. So if they're doing this to Zeus, I think they're going to be doing this to other apps as well. And the third one that they did, this is the third strike, is they did this to Fold. Fold isn't available here in Canada. It used to be.
Dirty little secret. If you still got the app on your phone, you can spin. I spin every day.
Or if you have a VPN, you can still do that. It's so easy to do. So you could do that and still spin. But so Fold is, you could get a physical card that's similar to like the ShakePay card in Canada. That's, I guess, the physical version of that. And when you go up, buy some purchases out there, a portion of that will be added in Bitcoin to your Fold account. And you could then use that to do whatever it is. So that's what Fold is. And they denied Fold their app on there. So it's too bad because they said it facilitates a transmission of virtual currency, the same thing they sold Zeus. Why are they doing this? This is an attack. Like, I don't want to say attack on Bitcoin, but it's attack on the developers for these apps over there. But it's not to say that Apple's doing this solely. I suspect also Google is going to do the same thing moving forward. And when Apple did this, I'll say this, there was a flood of people out there that were interested in some other products on Noster. There was a huge backlash to Apple. A lot of people were looking at other options, and primarily Graphene OS, which I happen to have here. And in fact, Mark Jetovic is going to be trying out one of my old phones that has Graphene OS in it, just to give that a go. And he's going to maybe say goodbye to Apple after all this. But this is just too bad. We don't need more of these companies out there to turn their back on these apps, but the apps are still going to flourish over time. The Damas app, for instance, it's going to be not only available now on iOS, they're going to now move forward. It's going to be available on Android, Linux. I'm not sure about Windows or Mac OS, but I like this. In this case, they're not going to be relying on a centralized store. They're now going to be relying on GitHub and the likes of those things. But we are looking at now going forward, there's going to be some companies that are going to look at Bitcoin and can say fuck you to that and try to stop it one way or another. It's too bad that they're doing it because you know what? The horse has been let out of the barn. This thing is going to just continue to grow, and whoever's going to be in his place, just try to stop him, they're going to get stomped, going to get trampled in the process. Apple's huge, but you know what? It's not going to be bigger than Bitcoin in the end.
How come Apple's not taking the same cut from all the banking apps that allow e-transfers?
I don't know. Do they do anything on those? I have no clue.
How come they're not taking it from WagJag and I don't know. What else do I buy shit on? Like, I have the Lululemon app on my phone. I buy shit from Lululemon sometimes on my phone. How come they don't take it from there? No. It's fucking bullshit. And it's so disappointing that Apple, a company that constantly views themselves and bandies about talking about how far ahead of the curve they are for producing the same fucking rectangle candy bar phone year after year, can't figure this out. My fear is that they have figured it out. They're doing this on purpose to suppress Bitcoin adoption at the behest of the US government, which honest to God, like, used to be crazy to say, but after the last year or so, there's no doubt that the government has people in all these companies for exactly this reason. And they're trying to stifle adoption. Now, Derek Ross gave a really good Derek Moss, Derek Ross. Now I forget. Moss. Jeez, I should. Yeah, Moss gave a very good presentation.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Now you should look because I'm not going to look right now. But
I'm looking.
gave a good presentation on at the conference about Noster and mentioned this. And you know, he made the same point that you're making, Len, that there is no stopping it. You know, there is no shutting this down. Short of the phones all locking side loading options, short of the phones all stopping the allowance of Noster or Noster clients. Derek Ross. Yeah, I was right. I knew it.
Yeah, short sorry, of my the,
yeah, short of oh, the, all, short of the,
you got, holy geez.
Did you watch his presentation? He was showing his badges off. I thought it was a bit of a flex. I was going to tell him after I saw him that night. I was like, buddy, like, I don't know what the fuck all that stuff is, but that looks nuts.
Look at my zero. I got none, zero, but he's so active.
He's a guy who's doing a lot of good work telling people like, hey, this is something we can use now. It's not quite perfect, but it's a lot better than it needs to be for broad adoption. And he's right. There's no stopping this thing, Len. And I've heard people make the point that, you know, and Derek almost made this point on the weekend. He was getting close to it, but never actually said it, that this is not a payment. It's a feedback mechanism. I'm not buying something. I'm providing feedback, and this is the medium for the feedback. It's a message. It's not quite a payment. And I kind of like that framing, although I don't think it's enough to get around the App Store rules. But you know, at the end of the day, what we keep seeing is, and this is, by the way, not the first instance of this, right? Like, famously, Apple is trying to use these like barbaric rules, archaic, right? Rules about payments and whatnot on their platform to moderate the stuff that's on the App Store. Fortnite and V-Bucks still not on the App Store. I'm not sure if Twitch and the bits you buy on Twitch are part of that payment thing, but I'm just thinking of apps that I have on my phone where you can buy stuff in app, and there's tons of them. But like, still, it's not. You know, like Evernote, I have on my phone. I bought something on Evernote before, no problem. SoundCloud, I don't think you have to pay. What else do I have on here that would need a? You know, like, do they take a Spotify, like a Spotify scalp? I don't know. It's clear they're picking and choosing, though, is the point I'm making, trying to make. And it's up for debate why they're choosing to try and stifle Bitcoin. I would argue that the answer is kind of right in front of us. It's funny, then 2 years ago when we started the show, during the run up to 60 and then the 70K, me and you used to draw wood talking about if Apple spent some of their treasury on Bitcoin. Now there's almost no chance of it happening, I would say. Zero chance. Even though Tim Apple himself has said that he holds some Bitcoin, I think, among other things. But like, it's I don't know.
You know what? Nothing would surprise me now. Even with this move,
even them buying it, even after this,
nothing would surprise me at this point. You know, even if they put like the smallest, like 1/100th of a percent of their treasury into Bitcoin, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, if they put a good chunk, it probably would be, but I can't see them doing it. But
yeah, and I like to say, there's people in the chat, Narwhal, saying he has Domus on his iPad and can zap. It's not about being able to zap once you have the thing on your phone. They want to pull the app off the App Store, and then you won't be able to get more people on it, and zapping becomes a secondary issue. That's what they want. If you have the app, you can get full functionality. Apple doesn't lock down the apps like that. But this other stuff, like down the road, if you want more adoption, well, you're going to have to take away the zaps if Apple gets its way. It didn't, thankfully. But, the pressure's on. Pressure's on.
It's the third time. I mean, one time you could say, okay, it's an accident. Two times a coincidence, and three times they did it. That's a fuck you at that point, right?
Yeah.
But again, it's not just Apple. Google themselves, or Alphabet, whatever you want to call them, under them is YouTube. And this past week, their YouTube company, or their whatever the fuck you want to call it, they decided to say no to Swan Bitcoin, and they banned their channel for a brief period of time. And this is no small channel from Swan. So Swan channel had 54,000 subs at the time that they was banned. It's probably gone up since then, since they got a whole bunch of recognition for that. But why did they do this? YouTube's notorious for this type of thing. And Swan had a large following on Twitter, so they were able to rattle the cages and get a whole bunch of people to try to overturn this, and YouTube did. But here's another example of a company that has a centralized platform, centralized product that people use and is trying to promote Bitcoin and promote the adoption of Bitcoin. And they said, no, you can't use our product. You're banned. Fuck. You know what? It's inevitable. Something like that will happen to just about everything that's related to Bitcoin on YouTube. But yeah. What are your thoughts?
I don't care. YouTube is not a credible platform. We use it. People are talking in the chat on YouTube. As soon as Rumble comes up with a live chat, I'm going to suggest everyone move over there. And we already started streaming there. We stream on Bitcoin TV. We stream on Twitch. We're everywhere that I know we're going to have to wind up being once YouTube starts fighting this. We talked about this before. At some point, okay, right now the popular thing is vaccines because RFK, whatever. You can think what you want about that. Talk about RFK however you like. But at some point, okay, to think that the topic du jour that will be unpalatable to YouTube is monetary debasement, I think is naive. That's going to happen for sure. You saw the backlash from all the blue check morons on Twitter when Jack said hyperinflation was going to change everything. And, you know, he took a lot of shit for that. And a lot of people wanted him banned. He shouldn't say this. Never forget that there were people who economists and sort of modern financial talking heads take seriously saying that saying hyperinflation can cause it to happen. It's like saying the word divorce. You never utter it unless you're willing for it to take place. And, you know, to think that this is not going to happen on YouTube eventually, I think is naive. Again, Swan is in a weird spot because they're sort of promoting a token Bitcoin that they sell. I think if we were promoting Bitcoin, Len, and also sold Bitcoin, it might put us in a precarious spot. I think if we were giving, you know, quote unquote advice, this is obviously not financial advice. We say at the beginning of every show, it's in the disclaimer, blah, blah, blah. You know that. If we were giving financial advice and then benefiting somehow from the financial advice we were giving, and you know, especially in Bitcoin where the price swings are wild, you hear stories, governments are looking at this, it's in, kind of in the crosshairs. It puts you in a, yeah, precarious spot. It's precarious is the right word. I like that word a lot. It puts you in a precarious spot. And Swan should know that. I'm going to say there's people in the chat, D's in the chat saying maybe it was a marketing stunt. I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't.
That's a heck of a gamble. I don't know how you
can. It's kind of hard to get into a spot where you can get YouTube to ban you and then unban you for marketing purposes. Like, I don't know what that kind of marketing
is. I'd love to see that in reality. I would love to see that actually happen. But sitting here in the basement, I don't know how they would have achieved it. But if they did, fucking kudos to them because that worked out really well because they got a lot of eyeballs on their product as a result.
Yeah, big time, big time. But anyway, YouTube, not long for this world if you're a Bitcoiner, I think. That's where I'll leave it.
He's joking, he says, just for the people in the audio. Talk about D. I want to talk about a friend of the show, Jaime Garcia. And Jaime posted something on Twitter this past week. And he was tweeting out that the first group of seven students in Canada completed a Bitcoin diploma, and it was a 10-week program. Jaime was involved, he was very much involved in this, to taking the leadership role for this initiative. And this is a Mi Primer Bitcoin program. We talked about this program in the past. It's a free impartial Bitcoin education program that's currently being done in El Salvador. So now they're exporting that to the rest of the world. It's so they translated everything from Spanish to English. Jaime wasn't involved with the translation part of it. Other people did, but he did. He was the facilitator of this course, and the course is now taught in English in Canada. And he tells me it's open source, meaning that people can submit improvements. That's pretty cool. And the class caught a few errors, which they submitted for improvement. So that's good to see that this thing is working. The final exam, get this, and I want to see how many Bitcoiners can actually do this: creating a wallet, backing up seeds, create transaction, find it in the mempool, explain the input output, fees, UTXO, wipe seeds, erase a wallet, restore a wallet in a different brand of wallet. So there's a lot of different things that they're asking for people to do. I'm sure a lot of people that call themselves Bitcoiners can't do a number of these things. And I saw the picture of the students over there, and I don't want to like to say too much, but there's people there from all different walks of life. There was younger people and there were older people. So it's encompassing a whole bunch of different people that make up different demographics, different age groups. And it's good to see that this is being done outside of El Salvador, now being adopted in Canada. So Jaime Garcia, good for you for doing it.
Yeah, he was in the chat and Mike is asking where you can find the material. It's a good question, Len. Is the material available online?
It's open source.
It is open source. So you can, so is it, it's on some repository somewhere. Where is it?
I could find it. I don't have that information.
Don't find it. Jaime was here. He should still be here. He's a fan of the show. I don't know why he left. He can't have anything better to do on a Monday night than tell people where to find his shit.
Daughter. So. He couldn't attend a Bitcoin conference because his daughter had a soccer tournament this
past I know. Weekend. He's so committed.
Playing. I don't
no,
know.
It's Monday night, Len. No, we're not accepting that. We're not accepting that. Jaime, people need to know. They need to know where the content is, brother. We got to give it to them. We need to share the wealth here. Outstanding, Len. There's probably, what, a million Bitcoiners, maybe less than that, who can do all the things you just described right now?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different things.
Stephon Levera would say even less than that if you listened to his presentation yesterday, even less. Maybe. Like, that's a great number. That's a great, great initiative, telling people how to – because really, you can't
use this to transfer wealth
if you don't have all those tools in your belt, right? I think.
They should make that. You have to have that diploma, the ability to do all that before you could buy into an ETF.
Yeah.
That should be
Now we're talking. Yeah, man.
Give them a goal.
I love it.
So I got actually a couple more Bitcoin-related stories. This is going a little bit longer than I thought. But there's some consultation going on in Canada to strengthen Canada's anti-money laundering and anti-terrorist financing regime.
Just what we need.
Yeah. So this is a comments and feedback is being requested by the public, and it's going on until August 1st, 2023. If anybody wants the website, I'll be happy to share them, or they could look at this. So what they're trying to achieve here is they're trying to improve Canada's anti-money laundering and anti-terrorist financing regime. So they're going to be criminalizing unregistered money service businesses. And those businesses, quote, dealing in virtual currencies, end quote. And they're going to be looking at those that are not registered as that. And if you're not and you're still dealing with virtual currencies, you could face jail time as a result. So you better be registered if you are one of these virtual currency businesses. And they're going to say that they have the ability to authorize and freeze these virtual aspects for people that have suspected links to crime. So it's we saw what happened when they tried to freeze Bitcoin with the trucker protest not too long ago. Maybe if it's still on the exchange, they could do it. But if it's once exported or removed out of the exchange into a wallet, good luck. And they say some notable examples they're looking at are new technologies used in money laundering and terrorist financing risks, including one, crypto mixers and tumblers, two, DeFi, three, NFTs, four, the metaverse, five, privacy coins, and six, tokenized assets. So all these things are on their radar, and they might be developing some legislation to make sure that you're not using this for money laundering or financing terrorist activities. So if you have any comments or feedback you want to do, you could do so until August 1st, 2023.
Can you, like, is there a way to be more clear that you don't understand the concept of what the metaverse is than to add the metaverse on the same list as coin mixing when you talk about ways to launder money? Like, what are they talking about? Financing virtual terrorism, crashing the virtual planes in my virtual towers. What the fuck are these guys talking about, man? What are they talking about? This doesn't make sense. Now, what I do want to know, and maybe we can bring Francis on, or like Francis can talk about this. I know we discussed it briefly on the weekend. What does it mean for a company like Bull? And, you know, is this just yet another reason why holding user funds is a bad idea? Because, you know, Bull Bitcoin can't freeze your crypto because your crypto is not there. Your Bitcoin is not there, right? You might have a CAD balance for a bit if you're doing DCA, whatever, but to me, they look to be exempt from this, and I would love to hear what his take is on that. I see all caps in the chat saying trading NFTs, wash trading in NFT land is money laundering. For sure it is. We've talked about that a bunch, that people are selling NFTs. I would add ordinals to that list too, I think.
I think it's all encompassing.
Yeah, I would add to that too. So I don't know. Narwhal, great comment. The metaversions hate us for our freedoms. God, that's good. That's a great callback to earlier presidents of the United States. I don't want to go further than that, because just in case YouTube is in the banhammer mood, I don't want to get busted. But yeah, interesting story, man. Also, you tweeted out the link to the feedback on the Central Bank of Canada's CBDC feedback survey, whatever there's a name for it. Today's the last day Carlo Campisi of ShakePay, friend of our show, obviously, like our first sponsor, talked about it on the weekend during his panel with Megs and Brad and Ben Harper. Worth taking some time doing the survey. It's like 10 questions. There's two ways to do the survey. You give honest answers and give, you know, feedback that will hopefully at least engage the person who's reading it, or you go on there and make a dumb comment and shitpost and they ignore you. I would recommend the first. If you don't want to share that you hold Bitcoin, that's a different story. But when they ask for feedback, text feedback, give good answers so that they're harder to ignore. It's something we should be doing, I think. And we've talked about that a bunch. So yeah, worth your time.
You know, Joey, let's move on to Clown World news. And I have a few stories I want to talk about. I'll just tee it off for you to really hit this one out of the park. CPI came in 4%, blah, blah, blah. They got the interest rates. The decisions are going to be coming up because it looks like CPI is slowly coming down. If you look at these fudge numbers, so they could use that as their guiding light of what they're going to do with these interest rates decisions moving forward. Another thing that's Clown World related is Congress has instructed Janet Yellen to have the Treasury and Federal Reserve make preparations because it looks like China is going to be dumping the remainder or a lot of their U.S. treasuries in a very short period of time. And that's going to create some havoc with the Treasury's market. So, yeah, it looks like the Federal Reserve and Janet Yellen is going to have to figure out some plan moving forward to ensure that there is some solvency with their debt. But Janet Yellen is also saying that she's acknowledging that there should be some, there's going to be decline with the US dollar as a reserve currency. This is telling when you have this coming from the Treasury Secretary, because you'd never want to hear something like this, but this acknowledgement that things are trending in the wrong direction with respect to the United States maintaining its dominance. And you can just even look at what's going on with BRICS. There's so many nations that are applying. I'm not sure if it's truthful, but apparently there's 30 nations in total that have submitted applications or want to submit, including Mexico, which is very odd to me. We talked about that before, but I'm shocked that even that's still in play. And I thought that rumor would have been squashed. But last thing that's going to show you this is truly Clown World is Taiwan. I'll leave it at that.
That's a crazy story. I want to talk about that in relation to Yellen. You know, has the U.S. ever looked weaker? In the last 7 days, including Blinken, I believe this morning or yesterday morning, things are kind of blending together for me here, but you've had Yellen say that the Treasury is preparing for a dump of all U.S. debt by China. Insane. You've had her say that there is going to be a steady and slow decline of dollar dominance. Insane. And then today, Secretary Blinken, looking like Roger fucking Ver, talking about how the Americans don't support Taiwanese independence. They've completely discarded this idea of strategic ambiguity related to Taiwan in favor of supporting China's position on whether or not the island belongs to them or not. I can't think of a time the U.S. has looked weaker. You couple this with the clip that went viral, I can't remember if it was Friday or Saturday, of Biden and Fetterman, literally dumb and dumber, trying to string together a sentence between the two of them. They can't do it. And then Biden looks like he's, again, like in a fugue state, kind of wandering around on the stage. But like, what? Someone's got to explain to me what the bull case for the United States is in the next 5 years. What is it? Like, can you think of one? All the Americans we know can't seem to be able to come up with anything. There's people on TV who talk about like it's constant like infighting and race wars and demographic wars and class wars and vaccine wars and mask wars and wars overseas.
It can't continue though, right?
Can't. Like it can't.
Right, that's it. Like
okay, but the question is, how does it resolve? If you told me it couldn't continue, like when Trump was the president, for sure, Trump and him calling everybody, you know, nasty woman, a moron, an idiot, Sleepy Joe, Crooked Hillary, like that can't go on forever. But the resolution is not American dissolution on the world stage. It's we probably will vote in a new president or the Republicans will pick a new leader. But when Biden is out there and Trump is the guy on the other side of the aisle, especially because Trump is the guy on the other side of the aisle, again, like the resolution to this doesn't look to me to just be another cycle of political games. It looks to me to be there's going to be another power creeping into the main stage here. And like this idea that like Americans are untouchable, again, like you and me have a lot of American friends thanks to this show. it doesn't seem like any of them really believe their own hype either. Like, do you see this result?
How can they?
I know, but I'm saying, like, so how's it resolved? The problem is
if it resolves itself. I could tell you it resolves itself. This thing will continue so far down. Like, if you look at, if you have the ruler out there and you have like sanity in one side and clown world in the north, this will continually go down that clown world path. And it will just go off the deep end and it will transcend time and space and wrap around into sanity and get back to sanity. It's just got to keep going down that clown.
Or does this become the new normal? Like, we just think that this is normal.
No.
Like,
it's transcending time and space.
We're brain just damage on stage at all times trying to tell us. Did you see Corinne Jean-Pierre, KJP, Corinne Jean-Pierre talking to this today about how she's a historic figure and she views herself as a historic figure. She's historically incompetent for sure. I've never seen anyone get dunked on by Peter Doozy as much as she does. But like, for her to go on TV and say that she's a historic figure living through a historic time, what the fuck are you talking about, man? You're a clown. You are a clown. Everyone thinks you're a clown. Everybody.
Those are the thoughts of Joey, not mine. Oh, don't come after me. Let's move on. Let's move on before we get this thing canceled. We won't be on YouTube very much longer. This is truly clown world, Joy. This one here. Britain. Did you see that they had to fire up coal plants this past week?
I love that. Tell me more. So
they stopped burning coal about 1.5 months ago. And because it was too sunny and a heat wave hit the country and there's a spike in demand of electricity, their solar panels, unfortunately, couldn't meet the demand. So the higher temperatures reduce the solar panel efficiency. So up to 33% lower than the prior week, apparently, in this particular case. So solar panels are tested at a benchmark of 25 Celsius. Sorry, my American friends, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. So they're tested at a benchmark of 25 Celsius. For every degree rise in temperature, there is a reduction in efficiency by 0.5 percentage point. So this could really ramp up. So indirect sunlight too. Think about this. The cells could easily reach 60 or 70 degrees Celsius. So if it's a sunny day, if it's warm, these things are not going to produce the same electricity as they would in a cool environment. And in this case, well, Britain didn't have enough electricity to meet the demand. Their solar panels were ill-equipped to meet that demand, and they had to fire up some coal plants as a result. That is funny stuff.
What do you want me to say to that? Like, what can be said? Like, what are we talking about here? I didn't know that when it gets too hot, aka too sunny, solar panels stop working. I thought that we were putting in solar panels because things were getting too hot. Now you're telling me that when they get warm, they don't work as well. Isn't the efficiency of those things already basically fucking zero anyways? Like, aren't they already really terrible in terms of like actually transforming solar energy into electricity? I thought they weren't very efficient. They're like 60% or something like that in the best of times with like the most recent technology. And so you're telling me they lose 30% of that when it's too hot? Also, how fucking hot can it be in Britain? You know, like if it doesn't work in Britain, how's it going to work in a place where you would like want that energy to be abundant? Like want those solar farms to be huge to capture all the sun. Places like on the African continent. What is the plan there?
You're not taking into consideration there's people like with pasty skin walking around without shirts and that sun is reflecting off their bodies and there's more rays that's hitting the solar panels as a result. So you got to take these all into consideration. So maybe in an environment that has more sun and you have more of a base tan, you don't have this problem. So
which peer review study did you find that in? I haven't seen that research yet.
Oh, it's a CBP exclusive.
It's an exclusive. Yeah. CBP journal. Yeah, nice. Okay.
Let's wait for that. But let's go to Clown World North. And this is actually a sad one. You know that there's a lot of societal pressures out there. You have people that have low self-esteem, and there's a lot of issues out there, you know, body image issues and so forth. Well, there's a recent national report by the Community Food Center of Canada. So keep in mind what I prefaced with my thinking there. Mm-hmm. More than one in five single adults, this is not ones that are hitched up, so single adults. So more than one in five, in fact, 22%, live below the poverty line. That is an extraordinarily high percentage. Many of these working adults, working single adults, they rely on low-wage, part-time, temporary unemployment opportunities that lack benefits and stabilities. I'm guessing people serving food and something along those lines. I don't want it to paint them all with the same brush, but it seems to me that's the type of environment they're working in. Nearly 1 million working age single adults, that's a lot of people, are stuck in a cycle of what they call deep poverty. Never heard of a deep poverty term, but here it is. With an average annual income less than $11,700.
Oh, boy.
It's 1 million. So that is, they say nearly
1 million people in Canada have that income or less. Adults. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Single adult. And it's primarily it's single adults that they're showing that has the higher percentage, the highest percentage. Nearly half of single adults, 47%, live in unaffordable housing. This group of people, the single adult group of people, given which I'm seeing in the social media and society at large, this number in terms of total, like total number, is going to grow. So there's going to be, and if this, so if these numbers stay the same or get worse in terms of percentage wise, it's going to be a sizable section of the population that is earning very little, that are living in unaffordable housing. Their lives are going to be stuck in this trap because it's hard to get out of it. It's not like you could go out and buy Bitcoin if you're earning less than $11,000 and think that's going to be a hope that's going to carry you forward. You can't even afford to pay your meals or your rent. So you're stuck in this, and then you throw in shit like VR and all that. They're giving people all these opportunities just to almost like, here's something for today, but there's nothing for tomorrow. And it's too bad. There's so many people in this situation. It's going to get worse. And this is what's going to really cripple the country, is you're going to have so many people out there that need assistance, and it's going to be costly to provide that assistance.
What do you do to fix this? What can you do?
I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. I mean, give them opportunity to go play sports and have fun with each other.
What are you going to do? You're going to put them in a poor's dome and let them do that? Like, it's, you can't.
I don't know.
These people are unmarketable in the romantic marketplace because of their income. They're broadly unmarketable even in like the platonic friendship, you know, with either gender marketplace, because nobody wants to be seen with somebody who has low income like that if they're a person who values their reputation. I would include myself in that, unfortunately. Like, there's certain people for sure that I don't want to be associated with because of the way they carry themselves, the job they have or the job they don't have, or they've been unemployed for so long. Does that make me shallow? I don't know. But at some point, you have to protect your reputation a little bit. Do you not? I think that's fair to say. What's the fix for these guys? They're in a situation that's untenable and that they can't escape from. Now, the more dicey question as far as, like, you know, monetization of this channel is, how much money do new Canadians get per year from the federal government or the provincial government or the municipal government?
It's
fucking more than 11,000, I'll tell you that. And so my question is, why, as we cross the 40 million person wall here in Canada, why can't we help the people that need help if we're giving this money away anyways? I'm not necessarily saying giving the money away is a good idea. We all think it's inflationary to do this, but Jesus Christ, man. If you live in an urban center, Hamilton, Toronto, Burlington, Oakville, you know, Quebec, Montreal, some of the East Coast cities, some of the West Coast cities, even places like, you know, even places that are like adjacent to these big metropolitan centers, you're seeing now almost everywhere people living in destitution, in tents, addicted to drugs, unable to find work. And so when you can't find work and you can't eat, you get desperate. You do these things. What do you do to fix your situation? Once you spend a month in a tent, it's hard to get out of tent mentality. Other people will always see you as a guy who lived in a tent. The employer you can't get an interview with will wonder why you're living in a tent. What happened that you're living in a tent? These are natural human inclinations. I feel bad for these people, but I feel worse that we're squandering money, you know, overseas even at this point. And it's not just Canada, it's the United States as well. United States arguably worse than us. How do you fix it? 11,000 is nothing, Len. Like, I think probably I made $11,000 working like 50-hour weeks at Zellers over 4-month summers when I was in high school, or not in high school, in university, sorry. like it wasn't that hard to do. And, you know, like now these guys can't do it in a year. And by the way, that was in $2,004, $5, $2,023 should be easier.
A lot of them, I mean, I don't say a lot, it could be a sizable portion might have some challenges that are preventing them from working the hours yeah. required to meet. So, I mean, whatever challenge it may be, those are hurdles that they have to try to overcome, and it's hard to do so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's too bad. And
it's tough.
You know what? I'll have one last story, Joey, and then we could cut this one short.
Sure.
And it's the Bank of Canada. They published a paper this past week, and it was titled as "What People Believe About Monetary Finance and What We Can't or Cannot Do About It: Evidence from a Large-Scale Multi-Country Survey Experiment." And through this whole report, many pages, Canadians weren't surveyed. They surveyed a whole bunch of other countries. Canada, people in Canada weren't surveyed, but they found that people are financially illiterate and possess what they say as limited levels of microeconomic literacy. That's not painting a good picture of people. And they say people are repeatedly confronted with contradictory messages regarding the feasibility and desirability of monetary finance. They also note that conveying the message to the public is particularly challenging for central banks, given the perceived complexity of the topic and the possibility, possible limited levels of microeconomic literacy in the population. So they're painting people in a light that they know fuck all with respect to
finance. Trying to.
And there may be some truth to this, but let's be honest. How many people out there are in a position that they can learn about this? They have a job, they have family that they have to deal with, they come home, their money is being debased, so they have to spend time to try to ensure that the money they have isn't going to be wrecked. So they learn about the stock market, they learn about what some other investment tools, so they spend a time doing that, and just with that they could probably hopefully tread water or get ahead. And it's this whole complex system that was set up by these central banks, and they're ripping people for not learning or not understanding the whole process. It should be simplified. If you have, you can. If you don't, you can't. Now you throw in debt, you throw in leveraging, you throw in derivatives, then derivatives of derivatives and all this bullshit. Of course it gets complicated and people don't understand, because they have things in their lives, priorities in their lives that they have to deal with before they could understand other things like what the central bank is pushing upon people. This is almost a no-coin rant, but it's not quite. So I'm just trying to say that this fucking bullshit that they're presenting by the Bank of Canada, it's utter crap, and it's too bad that they didn't survey Canadians in the process, because it's a Bank of Canada research. Shouldn't they even include some data from Canada and even segregate that to show how Canadians compare versus the rest of the world? Better, worse, or the same? But they didn't. And that's fucking bullshit. So, you know, this, when I read this, it's almost they're trying to gaslight, and it does kind of work. I'm getting worked up right now. But in the end, it should be in one ear and out the other. And let's move on, because these guys, they created a complex system because they wanted to be complex so they could fucking run it. It's time to get rid of it.
It's funny. One of the questions in that survey, I believe, was like, you know, do you know what happens when someone takes on too much debt and it's more than they bring in or something like that? Like, and is that sustainable over a long period of time? And, you know, they're saying, oh, people don't know the answer. The fucking Bank of Canada doesn't seem to know the answer to that question either, do they? Does any central bank know the answer to that question? If you ask central banks the same questions they asked of individuals, would they look in the mirror and be able to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe we don't actually have the answers to these questions either, because we're doing all the wrong things, right? It's a do what we say, not what we do mentality over there, over and over and over again. If banks behaved the same way that households have to behave, we'd be in a lot better position. But instead, they operate with impunity because they got the spigot. We know this. So this idea that people are financially illiterate, I think, is really something to behold from our central bank. I think it's embarrassing they post this survey. I think it's disgusting they try and gaslight everyone into thinking that we're all stupid. We're not stupid. We're the ones who actually have to think about every decision we make, every dollar we spend, right? I have to think about what the interest rate is. I have to think about how much groceries cost. I have to think about how much gas I'm putting in my car, when I'm putting it in. Do I want to try and time it? Whatever. The bank never has to think about this stuff. Never. Decision makers never have to think about this stuff. Never. The financial literacy in terms of more complex topics. Yeah, man. Hey, you know, if I wasn't working 10-hour days and then making chicken fingers, it's the only thing I can afford, then going to sleep with my 8 other roommates and then getting up and going to work in my 10-hour job again, maybe I'd have some time to do a little research on how financial derivative markets work. But I fucking don't. I fucking don't. Okay? Forgive me for having to live in this dystopian debasement, you know, freak show that you guys have put on over the last 100 years. Of course, we don't have any fucking time to learn. But at least I have to pretend that I care when I spend my money, unlike you. That's what I would say.
Yeah, very well said. And with that, that's a wrap for this show, Joey. So do you have the price of Bitcoin handy in U.S. dollars? I have to pull it up here.
I got in U.S. 26,815. Another hundo on the board here, buddy. Come close to that 27K.
And in Canadian, $35,427. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in on the video side. We'll go to the after show in just a moment. I just want to say one last thing. We do have some shirts for sale. So if you're listening to this, you want to get some shirts, reach out to us. We'll be happy to accommodate. And it's going to be $25, as mentioned, Joey mentioned this top of the show, $25 in Bitcoin Canadian. So not American Canadian. And then the shipping cost on top of that as well, which hopefully is minimal.
Yeah, that's it. Easy. Piece of cake. God bless. I am going to be on tomorrow with Drew Armstrong from Cathedra. I haven't told my wife that yet, but that ought to be a good show. We're going to do 45 minutes or so on what's going on over there, mining and whatever else he wants to talk about. And then Wednesday, who you have Wednesday? Do you remember?
Yeah, Nobody Caribou. I got Nick coming over.
Hey, nice. Yeah,
I'm so looking forward to what's going on with him. I don't want to say too much. He has been traveling. I don't want to say where. Hopefully we'll disclose that information on the show. I think he's back in Canada too. I was kind of hoping I'd see him yesterday, to be perfectly honest, but he didn't. But I'll get to chat with him on Wednesday. And I even gave him a small donation in Bitcoin because I like the guy, and I want to ensure that he stands on his 2 feet one way or another. So I gave him a couple of bucks in worth of Bitcoin not too long ago. I like Nick, man. I like him a lot.
Yeah. Good dude. Okay, so we'll do maybe 10 minutes here after show. If you're on audio, come over to YouTube, watch the rest. If not, we'll see you tomorrow night for Drew, 7 o'clock.
Yeah, man. Take care and PV.